Well, after last night, I'm a little more certain that the world is not ending. Tune in tonight, though. It might go back into the iffy category. Sorry, you Cubs fans. I was rooting for him. As Roger said, I heard him say he's a White Sox fan. He's rooting for him. I'm rooting for him. I'm a Yankees fan, and I'm rooting for him. Looks like two good teams, so it's hard to... It's hard to root for one. Hey, but root for our Slicers and root for our Cougars. New Prairie and LaPorte are both moving on. Yes. Pray for their health this upcoming weekend as they play, as they continue to move on in the postseason. And we're very proud of them and very proud of our LaPorte Volleyball, who also is just amazing. And I could go on and on, but I got to preach today. So I'm going to go ahead and move to this. But... this question is what I pondered as I was looking at this passage, and we're going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 1 through 5. The question of, are you successful today? I'm asking myself, and I'm sitting at my desk, and I'm sitting on the couch, and I'm laying in bed, and I'm thinking, are you successful today? How do we measure that? What does that look like? Am I successful today? What you might say about me, what I might think about myself, what some other group might think of me, am I successful today? Am I successful today? And you think about the barometers that the world measures by, and you know what they are. You know, there's the profit thing. You know, how much are you earning, right? That's certainly a measuring stick people use. Prosperity, you know, what do you own? How much do you own? How many toys you got? Prestige, you know, how high are you in the corporate ladder? You know, where's your rank and file and all these things? What's your status in the community? What's the title you hold? That sort of a thing. But I think it's much deeper than that, and that's what Paul was getting at here as he talks in this passage. He just comes off this last part in chapter 3, and once again, he's reminding this church that he planted, that he started, that now they're debating about Apollos and Peter and, you know, this and that and the other thing. You know, who's the successful one, right? Who's getting the prestige? Who's getting the popularity? Just like those things I just talked about. In other words, who's successful or not successful? And he sets him straight on what that ought to look like as far as success in God's eyes, success in a spiritual way. Our passage today, verses 1 through 5, I want to look at verse 3 here real quick. This is what he says about all this after he ponders it, and I'll get to verses 1 and 2 in a minute. But he says, I care very little if I am judged by you or by any human court. This is that who cares what you think statement. How many of you have a teenager that said, I don't care what you think? Every day. And I return with, I don't care what you think. So, no, we've always wanted to do that, and I was tempted to have you turn to your neighbor and tell them who cares what you think, but probably some of you would find way too much joy in that because of who you're sitting next to. I know Ryan would find great joy in that to turn to Heidi and say, yeah, I don't care what you think. But it's true. We like to come back with that response sometimes. It doesn't matter to me what you think. Who cares what you think? You know, Judge Judy says that a lot if you watch Judge Judy. I'm a Judge Judy fan. She lets them have it a lot. But Paul's letting them have it a little bit here after they're kind of, you know, putting them over the coals a little bit about who's popular, who's got the power now, who's in control, who's in charge. And he says, you know, I don't care what you guys think. Just bursts their bubble, just takes all the steam out of their whole energy there to be able to get at him with this. And I think it's something that we need to learn from, because we often, when that person says, I don't care what you think, or who cares what you think, that bothers us. And although it should to a certain extent, it shouldn't consume us, it shouldn't own us, it shouldn't drive us. We should be careful about whom we serve and how we serve. You see, true success is not measured in the terms of what man says about us or can even see in us. It's determined by what God can see in us. And that there's a huge difference in that. Man can only see so much in one another, where God sees it all. So what might look like this beautiful thing to you, this envious lifestyle, this success, this popularity, this, you know, property owner of 1,000 properties, you know, it might be just a dead sea when it comes to their heart and their soul. In which case, it really doesn't matter that it looks good on the outside if it's not good on the inside. And Paul was able to say this to them because he recognized this, and he says it in this way. He says, my judge, says Paul, is not man or even myself, but God. You see, there's three types of ways that we're typically judged. We're either judged by others, right? We either judge ourselves, right? Or we recognize that God is our judge, and that's the best one because the other two are incredibly flawed. When other people judge us, it's only based off of an external, it's only off of opinion, it's only off of limited knowledge, limited insight, a limited awareness of what we're going through, that sort of thing. When we judge ourselves, it's skewed because we often judge ourselves, we often pit ourselves up against somebody who's way worse than us so that we look really good, right? I mean, we never pit ourselves up against, you know, somebody really high and good and, you know, lives really good and is really Christian because that makes us look like us. We don't like that, so we often pit ourselves. So we have a tendency to do that when we judge or grade ourselves. We grade ourselves in a fair, in a decent way. So it's skewed, but God doesn't grade on any of that scale. He doesn't judge on the curve or whatever. He looks at you and you specifically. It's not about how everybody in the class is doing. We're not going to lower the percentile for everybody so that everybody passes. This is going to be individual basis, and where you land is where you land with your grade. And that can be a good thing and that can be a bad thing. If you're serving this world, that can be an issue for you. If you're serving God, that can be a really good thing. If you're not serving God, that could be a problem. And so it's not man, it's not even myself, it's God that judges. And then he tells us, we have to backtrack a little bit here, verses 1 and 2, but he tells us what that looks like, how God will judge us. Verses 1 and 2 say this: so then this is how you ought to regard us. This is how you ought to know us. This is how you ought to consider us. This is how you ought to remember us. This is what we should be known for, right? We should be known as servants of Christ. You see, if we're known as that, then it really doesn't matter what the crowd says. It really doesn't matter what the people around us think. It doesn't matter whether we're being jeered or flogged or applauded or whatever. We have to focus on that. We ought to be regarded. How do people regard you? I put this back to the question of, would I consider myself successful today? Well, how do people regard me? Do they regard me as a nice guy? Do they regard me as, well, you know, he's a nice pastor, or oh, he's, you know, he takes in too many kids, or, you know, how do people regard me, you know? And you get to thinking, the only way you really want, or I want anybody to regard me, is I want them to regard me as a servant of Christ. Because if that's my focus, then the rest of these things all fall into line. It's back to that passage of seek first him and his kingdom, and all these things will be given to you as well. It's a matter of whom we serve, though, who we answer to. We cannot answer to multiple people. We have to answer to just one. It should be evident to all in our life, all that we encounter, who we serve. It should be clear that we don't serve our family. We don't serve others. We don't serve our bosses. We don't serve our customers. We don't serve our country. We serve Jesus Christ. And when we've got that piece right, then from that piece, out of that should flow service to our country and to others and to our families and to our friends and to those who are lost. But it has to fall in that order. Otherwise, it's all show and tell, smoke and mirrors, and it's not real. And so Paul could say this: I don't care what you think. I don't care if you want to judge me. Who cares what you think? Because he knew inside the judge who really was going to judge him, and he knew what his heart was and what he was doing. And his heart and what he was doing was pure, and that was to plant churches, to lead people to Jesus Christ, to do the work of the kingdom. And so therefore, it didn't really matter what other people thought. But it's about who we serve. Who is our master, if you will? That's important. That's a question we have to answer. Matthew 6:24 speaks of that. But I like the story of Mark Twain and a Mormon. Mark Twain and a Mormon, and maybe you've heard it before. If you have, just humor me and just laugh, pretend like it was hilarious. Mark Twain and a Mormon were arguing about polygamy. And I don't know if you know what polygamy is. Polygamy is stupidity. Polygamy is having more than one wife. Yeah. Okay, so they're arguing about polygamy. The Mormon said, give me just one verse in the Bible that forbids polygamy, because they try to contend it doesn't. And Twain quickly answered him, that's easy, no man can serve two masters. That didn't fly very well. I mean, you had a pen, I had marked it off for second service. But it's true. Matthew 6:24 says this, no man can serve two masters. There's truth in that statement. Kidding about the woman thing, but no man can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. It's true. There has to be a master of it all. You know, right? You've ran into this problem before, I'm sure, with like, hey, my good buddy wants me to go do this, but my wife doesn't want me to do it. And I went to my pastor, and he says, well, you know, you got to live with her, so you figure it out. Right? If you use all these other sources, right, and all these other influences, it's messy. But if there's one master, and that's just God, and he determines for, you know, what's right, what's moral, what's good for your marriage, what's good for your life, perhaps, you know, then you're going to make your decisions in a different manner. But when there's multiple masters and it doesn't work like that, there has to be one master. We ought to be servants. Even he who came to save us came to serve us. Jesus did that. And so certainly that ought to be our lifestyle. But he needs to be our master, and the rest of the things need to fall under that. We need to serve him first and foremost. Our goal ought to be to please him in all the things that we say and in all the things that we do. That ought to be our main objective. So moving on here, Paul talks about this. 1 Corinthians 4, we ought to regard ourselves as servants of Christ and those entrusted with the secret things of God. Now, the secret things of God is, he uses the word mystery. It's what wasn't known before, what's known now. Jesus was talked about for a long time about coming, and now Paul's saying that we know all about him. He's came and he's paid the price. He's done his thing for us. We have this freedom now. So this mystery is no longer a mystery. It's a really cool thing that we know who came for us and who lived for us and who died for us and who rose again for us. And so that's that mystery. We should be entrusted with that message, entrusted with the secret things of God. And it says, now it is required that those who have been given a trust must prove faithful. I don't know about you, but when I leave somebody in charge of, you know, of my car, they borrow my car or whatever, you know, you kind of expect them to be semi-responsible, right? I mean, back in the day, maybe when you were, you know, in college, you don't expect a lot. Maybe this car makes it back the next day. But, you know, nowadays you expect them to be, you know, a little bit more responsible, a little bit more respectful with that. Well, the trust that we've been entrusted with, that mystery, that's what that's speaking of, is the gospel of Jesus Christ. Are we sharing that? Do other people in our lives know about what we believe? Do we know what Jesus has done for us? Are we exposing other people to him in our workplaces and in our neighborhoods? Have we even talked to our next door neighbors? You know, those are the questions that we need to ask ourselves. Now, it's interesting, the words that Paul uses about servants and entrusted and that sort of thing, given a trust, these words describe the work of a steward or a slave, which are words that are not in our culture today, but they were in the culture of the people in Corinth, and they would have understood immediately what Paul was saying when he used these words. A steward was a confidential slave to whom the master entrusted his affairs. He was an administrator of the master's household, but he was still a slave to the master. You with me? He was still a slave. Although he had great responsibility, he is always and in everything accountable to the master. That was a role of a person. You know, there might have been many servants under a leader, but there was one who was the head of it all, that kind of made sure, that knew the master inside and out and made the house run and knew the budget and did this and did that and, you know, made sure to get the coupons together for Walmart and did everything. That's just the way it was. But still, even that person who had that great responsibility, that great trust, that great level of position, if you will, or prestige amongst the other servants, he was still accountable to the master, both himself and in his work. And it's true for you and I today. That speaks to you and I today. Even though this verbiage doesn't happen in today's culture, this philosophy, this truth that we are, in fact, under our master, ourselves and all of our work is an answer to him, is a gift to him, is an offering to him, is a life to him. It's a description of you and me. We are redeemed by him. We belong to him. He's our Lord and Master, for he redeemed us by his blood. And this life we have came from him. So none of it's ours. We don't get to say, well, I'm not under that portion or under that portion. We absolutely are. All of our life and all of our work that we might accomplish, all of our successes, it's all God's. Every bit of it. And he's given us a trust, a work, if you will. And the most basic of that is the Great Commission, to share the gospel. He's called us to do that, this mystery, this secret that's been revealed. All of us might do different things with our lives as far as jobs go, and that's fine. Whether you're a firefighter, policeman, whether you're a pastor, whether you're a teacher, whether you're, no matter what that is, that's okay. But we're all called to be, to follow the Great Commission, to lead others to Jesus Christ. That, we don't get out of that based off of our title. It's not just for me and I'm accountable to that and you're not and you get to leave here and, you know, be rude to people on the road and go to Christo's and cut in front of the Baptists. And you don't get to do that sort of stuff. You have to be accountable as well. You have to do the right thing just as I do. You have to share the gospel. And sharing the gospel is not just with our mouths, but it's also with our actions. Paul said, now it's required. It's required. You see the wording, it's required that those who have been given a trust must prove faithful. Why would you give them a trust again if they proved unfaithful to you? That wouldn't make any sense. You know, we can see this in Matthew chapter 25, verses 14 through 30. And I'm going to read it out of my Bible because I don't want to look at that little screen up there. But this is a passage that speaks of that. Starting at verse 14, we're just going to cruise through this, but I just want you to see the context of what I'm talking about today. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his ability. And then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with 2 gained 2 more, and the one who had received 1 talent went off. He dug a hole in the ground, and he hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them, as a master will do, as our master will do one day with the talents he's given you and me. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5, see, I've gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. And who doesn't want to hear those words? The man with the 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I gained 2 more. His master responded the same way. Well done. I will put you in charge of many things. Then verse 24. Then the man who had received the 1 talent came and he said, Master, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you've not sown and gathering where you've not scattered seed. So I was afraid. And I went out and I hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. And his master replied, you wicked and lazy servant. You wicked and lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well, then you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received back with interest. Received it back with interest. And then he says, take the talent from him and give it to one, the one who has 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And it goes on to say what the fate is of he who doesn't do well with his talents, his gifts. And I go back to that question. Is my life successful? Is my life successful? Paul questioned that because he was being challenged by others. Will I follow Peter? Will I follow Apollos? Will I do this? And I like them better. Is my life successful? And as I look at my life and as I look around and as I look at that passage, I think, have I been trustworthy with what God has given me? And he's given me a lot, and probably if you're honest, he's given you a lot as well. Family, and family is such a broad thing. I mean, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, aunts, uncles, moms, dads, brothers, sisters. I mean, you go on and on and on and on. Friends, the ability to work and make money and buy things and do things and go on family trips and eat out and do all these various things. He's given us such incredible things to be trusted with, but are we trustworthy with them? Have we taken what the Lord has given us and done well with that? Because I think that's the answer as to whether my life has been a success. It's not a matter of whether I doubled. See, the person wasn't given more because they had five and gained five more, or two, they had two more. What mattered was that they were faithful with what they had. And that's what God is concerned about. Are you faithful? Are you faithful with what you have? Being faithful with what we have is recognizing it all comes from God. It's all a gift and a trust from Him, and using it to the very best of your potential. Whether it's your marriage, whether it's the raising of your kids, are you handling that trust well? Are you handling that responsibility well? Because if you're doing those things, then you can, like Paul, say, I could care less if you judge me. I could care less if some human court wants to judge me. It doesn't matter to me. Because God is my judge. And I know that His requirements of me are not to look good in the world's eyes, to be more popular than the next speaker, to be more, you know, have more toys than the next door neighbor. His expectations of me, His requirements of me are to be faithful. Faithful with what He's entrusted me with. Am I doing that? Am I faithful? Matthew 24, verse 45 and 46, I think that's up there in your, says this: Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. You know, I joke about the Cubs winning it all and that perhaps being the end of the world, because I've literally heard people say, you know, Cubs aren't going to win until hell freezes over or something like that, you know, and so I do joke about that. But with that being said, you look at this passage and there's no question about the fact that the master's going to come home and he's going to find the servant, because we're all servants. He's going to find us doing something. The hope is that he finds us doing what he's called us and asked us to do when he shows up, right? This world can get us on a lot of tangents. We can chase after how to get the next thing, or how to get this, you know, promotion, or, you know, buy this new toy, or you know, get these people to like us, and so we'll do things we know we shouldn't do just for them to accept us. That's never the measuring stick. The measuring stick is to be trustworthy with the trust that's been given to you, to make sure that you have one master, that being Jesus Christ, one person, one entity that you serve in all things, and that being Him. And the rest of the service then flows from that. And as long as you're fulfilling that, then who cares what somebody else thinks? You know, there's a passage in here that I want to skip to really quick because it speaks to the people of the faith. And I'm going to go ahead and blitz past it just real quick here. I'm going to get to it here. In Hebrews 11, 36 and 37, this was the believers, because sometimes we mistake this successful. We think successful's got to look different, right? In our world, it's got to look like a certain way, and if it's not, then these were the believers of Jesus. These were the people that chased after Him, that were hungry for Him, that, you know, that loved Him. And look what it says happened to them. It's talked about in Hebrews 11. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. Sounds like a successful life to me. Verse 37, they were stoned, they were sawed in two, that's a good day. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins and destitute and persecuted and mistreated. And this was talking about the good guys. This was talking about the apostles. This was talking about those who loved the Lord and were trying to lead others to Him. And this is what this was their outcome. Wouldn't it look successful to you and I? We would have probably looked at that and said, no, that's not good. And yet it was very good. Look what it says in verse 38. Look what he refers to them as in verse 38. Just look at the bottom there. The world was not worthy of them. And see, when we recognize whom we serve, we recognize who's given us this trust, we recognize who we have to answer to, who our master is, we're going to look different in this world. We're not going to necessarily fit in. It's not going to always make sense to people because we're not of this world. And it refers to these guys, that the world was not worthy of them. And you know what? The world might not be worthy of how you're acting. And you might be getting tired and growing weary, going, why do I even try to do good? The world just keeps falling apart. It just keeps, you know, going south. Because he wants you to. He wants you to be faithful in what he's called you to. To be a good servant and a good steward. A good servant to the only master and a good steward of the trust that he has entrusted with you. Sharing the gospel with your words, but more importantly with your life. Don't grow weary in that. Continue to keep the faith no matter what the voices are saying around you, no matter what others are challenging with you or calling you names or picking on you. It doesn't matter. Because in the end, we want to hear those words in that parable we looked at, the well done, my good and faithful servant. And we will hear those words, despite what your talents are, we will hear those words if we're faithful with what God has given us. Pray with me. Father, we love you. God, we thank you so much that you care enough about us that you would give us this opportunity to be your hands and feet in this world. Father, clearly Paul was challenged. He was called on the carpet by these believers, by these churchgoers here in Corinth about whether he was in charge, whether his popularity was still as much as Apollos might have been or Peter might have been. And I just love Paul's calmness and his position in reminding everyone there, as he wrote this letter to all of them, it doesn't matter what humans say, it doesn't matter what human courts say, it matters what my God says, because my God sees in me and through me, and the world just sees the outside. It says that we're called to be faithful. He has given us a trust. This passage says, Lord, that we're to be known, we're to be considered, we're to be acknowledged as people of the faith. That's what it says. They should consider us servants of Christ. God, I think that would be a great way to be remembered or recalled or thought of in this world we live in, that others might look at me and not say, oh, he's got a lot of kids, or he's a good pastor, or he's this or he's that. He's a servant of Christ. Because quite honestly, Christ is the only one worthy of me calling master. Father, help me to do better today and better this week at showing others him, that you have a plan for them through him, that you sent your son because you love them. Father, help me to push aside the voices that call me to do this or do that to fit in or to be popular, to gain worldly success, and to recognize that my success is based off of whether I've been faithful to you and whether I've been trustworthy with what you have given me. Help us with that, Lord. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.